The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
That's right, and we are presented by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. We are the Raised by Wolves podcast, back for another week. This is the post-All-Star break edition of Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill here with Derek James. And Derek, we're in different locations this week. I think we were talking beforehand. This is the second time we've not actually been in the same studio recording
because of weather.
Yeah, exactly. Here we are, and we got lots to get to this week. We're going to recap All-Star weekend. We're going to talk about Jimmy Butler not playing in the All-Star game. How big of a deal was that or not? We've got some questions to answer from listeners. And we've got a big story out of Dallas Mavericks camp. From SI that was reported this week on the Dallas Mavericks that everybody knows about. And so Derek and I are going to weigh in a little bit on that this week. But first, we'll get to All-Star weekend. What were your thoughts? I mean, I didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of what happened on Saturday, the festivities and everything. I saw highlights from everything later on, but you got a chance to watch the dunk contest and the three-point shootout and everything. What was kind of your takeaway from what we saw Saturday, and then we'll get into Sunday here in a little bit?
Yeah, so I actually did have a chance to watch on Saturday. The skills challenge, it was fun. I like that they start to split up the big men from the, I guess, not big men. I'm not really sure what the cutoff is there. And it's fun because, you know, even the bigs now can keep up with the little guys as shooters. So that's an interesting dynamic to it. And it's kind of fun when you see a guy, you know, like Buddy Hield, where, you know, if the big misses his shot, his first three-point attempt, and Hield gets his off, it's probably over. And he's going to advance. And to see Spencer Dinwiddie come down to the wire like that was a ton of fun. And I think when you weigh the two with Devin Booker and winning the three-point contest, it really just kind of shows you just how much talent is in this league, even though the Suns and the Nets are horrible, that there's still this much talent all over.
Yeah, and I mean, to just see so many of these young players, I mean, it's crazy. Like, you go back to, like, I'll look back at, like, dunk contests from, like, 20 years ago, and they were good and they were great. I mean, you had J.R. Ryder winning one. You had Harold Miner back then. But those guys weren't really, at least we thought J.R. Ryder was going to be a star. And then obviously from, different things happening off the court kind of prevented him from doing that. But, I mean, Harold Miner was just kind of a guy, you know. I mean, but a guy like Donovan Mitchell has a chance to be, like, a star in this league for a long time. I mean, he's already kind of showing it as a rookie this year. And, I mean, you know, Larry Nance is a nice, nice, solid player. He's not a bench warmer, you know what I mean? So it was nice to see some of the young guys really come through. And Devin Booker, I think, is on his way to becoming a star player in this league, too, for a while. So it was nice to just see it's nice to see, like you said, the depth of talent that the league has. I mean, I think this is about as deep in terms of talent that this league has been at in a really, really long time that I can remember in all my years of following the NBA.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to take, you know, just more time to get down the road and to look back on this era and just realize just how fortunate we are.
Yeah.
I mean, especially after surviving 2000s basketball in the post-Jordan years when, you know, Kobe's taking 32 shots a game. And I mean, I think just the rule changes and just the general shift in mentality and the breakthrough of analytics and, you know, the higher value, you know, the three-point shot for the most part has really made the game more fun and just expand it. Because, I mean, everyone's been talking about, you know, the baseball rules and trying to speed up the pace of the games and all that. And well, in the traditionalists, you know, are always, oh, we can't do that. You know, this is sacred, or, you know, but we've always done it this way. And just look at how much the league has involved in, you know, continuously tweaking the rules. And, you know, it's really just really kind of sort of helped the league capitalize on that talent. And I did have actually a few of my favorite dunks that I wrote about, too, from the dunk contest, going back to it, because I realized I didn't talk about that.
Sure.
For one, Donovan Mitchell's first one. Did you see the, the Donovan Mitchell dunks? All of them or no?
I did see the one. I did see the Vince one that he did where he wore Vince's jersey. I remember the one he did. The first one was the one he threw it off the second backboard and then caught it and dunked it, right?
Yeah, that one made my list. I mean, just because it was on the first try.
Right.
And he just stuck it, and that was perfect. And then his other one, over the Hart family. I don't care if they're a bunch of tiny people. I mean, just looking at a still of his elevation and just how far back he had to reach for that and then hammer it down was impressive. And then Larry Nance, you know, paying tribute to his dad was cool.
That was awesome,
But I think the really cool one was his last one when he had the double tap off the glass and then dunked it in. And just thinking, like, big men don't usually do well in this. And he's not 7 feet tall, but he's a taller guy. And he just elevates and just holds air for so long and is able to put that down. That's, you know, like, I think when you look at a dunk contest, you want to see, like, oh, I could do that on an 8 foot hoop. I don't know that a lot of people could do that on an 8 foot hoop.
Well, it's people got to realize too, like, it's more than just being able to jump high. Like, there's body coordination in play. There's, you know, the understanding that you can't, you know, you got to be careful, like, not to hit your head on the rim when you're going up like that. I mean, there's
crack your wrist or something. Yeah,
right. Like, there's so much more that goes into it than just being able to jump high, because almost everybody in the NBA can jump high and touch the rim.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, Dennis Smith Jr.'s dunk, the between the legs where he changed hands.
Oh, gosh, that was
while
brilliant.
Doing a 360.
Yeah, that was
unbelievable.
That was unbelievable.
And I think, didn't DJ Khaled give him like an 8 or something on that? It's like, dude, he was the most unforgiving judge of all time. I'm not, you know, ripping on here when I say this, but of all people, like, what are you doing? Are you like sitting there thinking, oh, I could do that. No big deal. Like, no, like that's an incredible dunk. And just to have that coordination to be able to do that is just amazing. Yeah. And those three are really the most impressive ones to me.
Yeah. I thought Depot's Black Panther dunk was kind of cool. Just putting the mask on. And I think the timing of it, obviously with the movie coming out last weekend, was kind of cool. But yeah, the Dennis Smith one where he went through his legs and did the 360 was just, that was bonkers. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, that should be one that we look at, you know, years down the road and just be like, oh, remember that one from 2018? Like, I think that's going to be like that.
Yeah, and then you had Donovan Mitchell, like I mentioned earlier, paying homage to Vince, putting on his, you know, having his jersey on and doing the same one, doing the it's over dunk that Vince did. Way back in, that was what, 2000 when Vince did that dunk? Won that dunk contest?
I think so.
Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't lead to everyone, you know, same with Larry Nance putting on his dad's jersey, which I think, you know, it was also a tribute. Everyone does it, or multiple guys do it. You just don't want it to become kind of worn out, because Donovan Mitchell also put on Adrian Griffith's jersey, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you just don't want that to be... You don't want that to be worn out too much. Okay, let's go to the game on Sunday. I was fine with it. I thought it was a lot better than what we saw last year or the last 2 years, where it was just basically a glorified dunk contest for 48 minutes.
We almost had 200 combined points in the last two half times or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a lot better. It's... I mean, the people that were like, wow, you know, they still didn't play any defense. Well, I mean, you're not.
They were pressing in an all-star game. They don't press in regular season games.
Right. And the thing of it is like, you can't. It is an all-star game. Like, we have to remember, it is an all-star game. It is still an exhibition. It's, you know, these guys are not going to. You, what do you want Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn style play, like in the All-Star game? You want guys just tackling each other when they attack the rim? Like, it's just, it's like, come on, calm down, people.
I want to watch Bruce Bowen score 6 to 8 points and play incredible defense in my All-Star games. That's what I'm there for.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it was cool. I mean, it was kind of an exhibition type deal for most of the game, and then, you know, they get down to the last 5 minutes and it's like, hey, this is a close game, and you know, guys started to tighten up on defense, and it was fun. It was a nice finish and everything. It's like, what more could you have really wanted from the All-Star game at that point? I mean, and you know, we're at an era in the NBA, you know, because people were like, well, they were shooting so many threes. Well, we're in an era of the NBA where the 3-point shot is valued highly. So naturally,
who's still shy by a high volume of 3-point attempts?
Yeah,
that's so weird to me.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. But how about Jimmy not playing in the game? I wasn't offended by it. I know some people were mad about it or not kind of bothered by it, but I didn't. I mean, Cat got into the game and he had a nice game and everything. I wasn't too bothered by Jimmy not playing in the game. I thought it was kind of weird, and I thought he would play, you know, maybe 7 or 8 minutes, but I wasn't. I'm not one of those fake outraged people that are like, he should have been in the game, that's ridiculous type of thing, you know?
Was he disrespecting the sanctity of the competitive nature of the All-Star game? I mean, my word. Like, to me, the way I look at it, you know, I don't think that he doesn't appreciate it. I mean, because he still showed up. He could have been like, oh, my hamstring hurts. I'm not going to be able to make it this weekend, guys. Sorry.
Right.
He's still dressed up, and I know that fans, you know, they voted him in for a reason. They want to see him play. Well, I don't think they really voted him. I don't know how much that weighs in. At any rate, I mean, I still think he appreciates that acknowledgement for the season that he's having. But I think he's also, you know, looking big picture and realizes that the Wolves will start off with 12 tough games in a row, and they're probably not going to be able to rest even once the schedule, you know, eases up towards the end of the season. And so they're really going to need him at 100% and well-rested, because he's going to have about a week's worth of rest by the time they get going again. So, yeah, no, I'm just fine with it.
And that's a nice segue to our couple questions that we got. We only got 2 questions tonight, but we'll get to them both here. We got a question from M, who says, will Tibbs watch minutes as the season winds down? I think he'll watch minutes, but I don't know if that necessarily means that he's going to cut minutes down. I mean, I think he's going to be, it might, you know, if they get late into the year and they're fighting for, you know, they're trying to fight off Oklahoma City for the division and home court in the first round, you know, I mean, these guys, they're probably going to be playing heavy minutes because they're going to be trying to win games, and, you know, those games are important.
Yeah, and there's a 3.5 game difference between making the playoffs right now and the 9 seed. So you really can't let your foot out the gas or start to rest guys too early before you've secured and clinched anything. And I mean, this is the position they put themselves in. You know, when you lose to the entire lower half of the East on the road, I mean, this is the bed that they've made where they really just can't rest guys in advance, because I mean, at this point, they could, in theory, be comfortably in third place right now, especially the news about Kawhi Leonard probably missing the rest of the season. That certainly helps their case, but they didn't take care of business earlier in the season when they should have and could have. And now they're going to face the Rockets twice, the Celtics, the Warriors again. They play the Nuggets on the last night of the season, too. So the Nuggets, yeah. I mean, their playoff seed may not be set yet.
Yeah,
so they're not going to be resting, and then the Wolves can't rest either.
Yeah, well, if you look at Denver, like, Denver's going to be getting Paul Millsap back here pretty soon, aren't they, in the next few weeks or so? Because I think, he supposed to be out until March, I think, was the deal with him?
Yeah, and I think early, mid-March, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're Denver and you're getting that guy back, I mean, that's going to make you even more formidable. So, I mean, the Wolves are going to have to really, they can't get too comfortable, and they can't, you know, think that they have this this four, you know, at least, well, we got at least the four spot locked up. I mean, they just don't. And I think they realize that. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't think Tom Thibodeau is you know, and these guys are, you know, getting too comfortable or anything like that. Now, they did, like you said, they've made their bed and they realize what's in front of them right now. And they have to play the cards that have been dealt to them. So.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's where, to me, people are like, well, why is Towns still playing 40 minutes in this game? Well, probably because Towns needs to play 40 minutes in this game, because they don't just put away these teams that they should be putting away. And that's the frustrating thing. I mean, when Atlanta comes to town and they have, I think, two against Memphis at home,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's home and away, I can't remember which it is, but they have two more against Memphis, and over half their games in the final 11 are on the road, or at home, sorry. So, I mean, you're at home, and most of them aren't against playoff teams, so there are so many good opportunities to make up ground if they struggle first off, and maybe then that'll allow Tibbs to rest guys a little bit, but I don't really see things changing too much.
I wonder if, you know, they played the most games in the first, I guess, and I'm doing air quotes here, the first half of the season. They played 61 games before the All-Star break, so they only have 21 left here as of this taping. And obviously the next 12 games are going to be really tough against tough competition. But I wonder if the fact that they're not going to have as many back-to-backs and as many, you know, traveling back-to-backs as they had. Because you look back at the first 61 games, how many back-to-backs did they have? And how many, you know, traveling back-to-backs where they played a home game one night and then had to travel to another city the next night and play a game? How many of those did they have in the first half? And it doesn't look like they're going to have as many of those in the last 21 games. So that might work to their advantage a little bit.
No, and in the column I put up today, you remember January, where like every other night they had a game.
Yeah.
Almost really no joke. But they play Utah at the end of March, and then they have 4 days off before they play in Denver.
Yeah.
So the games do get spread out a little more than they were, too.
Yeah, so that'll be important. We got another question. Basically, is it time to hit the panic button on Andrew Wiggins? I will say this. I don't think it's time to push the panic button, but I am a little bit concerned about just the fact that, I mean, we went into this season thinking that, you know, the addition of Jimmy Butler was going to really help enhance Andrew Wiggins' play, because he was going to watch what Jimmy does and pick up some of Jimmy's habits, you know, on both ends of the floor, and just having another premier, you know, scoring threat in the lineup is going to help Wiggins and help take some pressure off of Wiggins. And, you know, it felt like Andrew was going to really respond to that. And there have been moments when he has, but I'm not hitting the panic button yet, but I am a little bit concerned that it seems like overall he has regressed from even from last year, at least on the offensive end, because it seems like his defense has gotten better.
Well, here's the thing. I just pulled up his basketball reference page. I didn't expect to see this. His efficiency has dropped back down to where it was as a rookie,
yeah,
which is not
bad.
Good.
Yeah.
His counting numbers per game, so his rebounds and assists, are below what it was his rookie year. Yeah, his defense, you know, man-to-man is a little better.
Yeah.
But overall, you can't really feel good about it. And, you know, it would have made sense to have, you know, even 2 months to adjust. But this is just kind of, this just seems like this is what's going to happen this year. And, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some concern being in year four.
Yeah, it's year four, and at this point, I mean, he's locked into the contract, and so, I mean, unless they're going to trade him, which I don't think they're going to look to do right now, but, or at least, you know, speaking more in terms of the offseason, I don't think they're going to look to trade him, at least right now, I don't think they're thinking about that. So he's locked into this long-term contract, so at this point, you just have to you have to look at Tibbs and you got to say, you got to find a way to fix this kid. Like, you know, he's 22 and he's got his whole career in front of him, and there's still a chance for him to turn into a really, really, really good player in this league. But something's not right, and they're gonna have to figure out exactly what they need to do to sort of get him back in gear. Because I don't think that this is just, you know, I think it's easy for people to just say that this is just kind of a slump. Well, he's just kind of in a slump right now. I mean, this doesn't seem like a slump to me. This seems like something.
This is 61 games.
We're 75% into the season, and we're just seeing the same trend. We're seeing a lot of the things that we've noticed for a couple of years. They've been just enhanced almost this year in terms of, you know, the negative stuff, the negative aspect of his game. And they got to figure out how to fix it. I mean, and you got to look at Tibbs, and he's got to figure out how this is going to work, because Wiggins is locked in. I mean, he's locked in for 5 years after this, and they got to figure it out, man.
This is their 125 whatever million dollar investment, and you need to be getting more out of that than what they've gotten. And I think just for the team's sake too, because you can't lock up that much cap space into a player you're hoping to be your second, third option long term, and get this kind of production. Because I mean, this is pretty replaceable stuff. I mean, he can be a great scorer. We already know that, but it's the inefficiency and just the lack of other production that he brings to the floor is just, it's really perplexing, because he obviously does have talent and skills, and we've seen him go out and grab 8 rebounds.
Yeah.
And he can show willingness to move the ball. It's just that it just doesn't happen for whatever reason.
I wonder if Tibbs has to, you know, I don't know if overhauling the entire offensive system is going to do anything, but they've got to, I mean, and this goes back to what we've been talking about even last offseason. Like, they've got to find ways to spread the floor. They've got to find ways to spread the floor. And this goes beyond Wiggins. Like, this goes for everybody. There's got to be more of an emphasis on spreading the floor. And
they have to change their entire philosophy in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, they just have to, because you can't, and it's easy to see them play against Golden State and against Houston, teams that just, that's what they do. They spread the floor and they move the basketball like crazy. So they make everybody look bad. I understand that. But, you know, I mean, they're still in the...
But that's what great teams do now.
What great teams do. And if you're going to want to...
And this is what's going to keep them from being reaching that level.
Exactly. Like, if you want to be... I think most people with, you know, common sense and a brain knew that this was going to be, you know, the idea of them going to the NBA Finals this year was going to be kind of, you know, pretty far-fetched, just with how strong Golden State and Houston are. And then you got, you know, Cleveland and Boston in the East and everything too. But if you want to become a team that's going to really contend with Golden State, we've talked about this all year. Like, you've got to be able to have an emphasis on hitting three-point shots. You've got to, I mean, even if you're not a great three-point shooting team, there needs to be more three-point shots taken. How many times have we watched games, even last week, like, look at, or was it 2 weeks ago? No, it was last week's show when we had Anthony on. We were watching the Rockets game while we were, just before we had Anthony on. And how many times did we see the Wolves just in that 5-minute stretch of us watching that game? How many times did we see the Wolves pass up on makeable 3-point shots, like good, decent to good looks at the 3-point shot, and they just passed up on them? And I don't understand it.
Yeah, and I mean, look what the Rockets did to them too. So if the Wolves are going to try to grind it out against the Rockets, that's just not going to work. Because what we saw that level of ball movement, guys were constantly having to switch and switch and switch. And while you can keep pace with that for a couple quarters, by the fourth quarter, you're going to have nothing left. And we saw what happened at the end of that game. they just got lit up. And I think that this, you know, that should serve as a good template. You need ball movement. You need willing shooters. And I feel like they did take a few more threes than they normally would have because they know, oh, it's the Rockets. Let's take a few more. But like you said, they still passed up too many of those shots, and that's going to keep them from having a chance in any of these games. I mean, so if they advance this year, you know, to the second round, they have to play one of those two teams. That's going to be a short series.
Yeah, it's going to be really short. And, I mean, they're just going to have to – and I don't know if you can just do a complete overhaul of your offensive system in, you know, 21 games or whatever. But, you know, I think there has to be, like – I look at it like this. You've got Kat, you've got Jimmy, at least through next year. And, you know, obviously when we get into the offseason, we can talk about, you know, what the future for Jimmy is going to be, you know, beyond beyond next season. But you've got Kat and you've got Wiggins and you've got Jimmy at least through next year. So you've got sort of your three core guys. Now there's got to be more of an emphasis on surrounding them with, you know, shooters and maybe, you know, there's guys on this roster that can become good shooters. I mean, Belly has shown at times that he can be a 3-point shooter. I mean, we had our doubts about it going into this year, but he's shown that this year that I think we've seen enough of a sample size now that he can be a reliable 3-point shooter. But he's got to stop passing them up when he's open. If he's open at the top of the key and 6-foot Chris Paul is trying to close out at him, Belly, you can still take that shot. Like, take the shot. It's mind-boggling.
Especially when you're 6'10 and you have 6-foot Chris Paul closing out on you.
Yeah.
You better be taking that shot.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just got to be more of an emphasis on it. And that's a horse that we've been, you know, beating to death, I guess, all season long, that there just needs to be more of an emphasis on it. So I don't know, until we start to see it, I guess it's just something that we're going to have to keep wondering about.
Unfortunately, that horse had to die.
Yeah. All right. So before we close the book on this week's show, this Dallas Mavericks story, man, where do we even begin? Like, where do we even begin with this? Like, this is...
I read the details of, like, just the reported interactions from multiple women and just the rehashing, like, all the details and just the things he would say to them. And when one woman in particular got hired, all her friends said, oh, watch out for the CEO. Hey, don't be alone in the elevator with him. And he was with the team for 18 years. And that's a long time to sweep something under the rug like that. Then you have the team writer that had one domestic violence charge, was arrested, gets up, he dates a team employee, and she shows up with a black eye, courtesy of him. He gets arrested at the facility, and I guess he tried to flee and everything, and that was a whole scene from the arrest records that Mavs Moneyball, SB Nation's Mavericks blog posted. And then Cuban's apology.
Yeah.
Let's go back to before the apology. The statement in the SI piece about how, oh, this is unacceptable, you know, none of this could have, you know, there's no way this could have happened, and, you know, I would have known about it. Meanwhile, he has his coworkers, the people underneath him, saying, oh, yeah, he knows everything that goes on with this team. And then SI was able to pull quotes from the past saying that, you know, he knows everything that I know everything that's going on with this team. Nothing gets by me. Well, I mean, what a horrible approach, because he immediately looks like an idiot or a liar or both. And none of those are good looks for, you know, the owner of a team. So it looks like he tried to cover something up, and then they since fired the writer, and then he issued the apology. Oh, you know, I'm sorry for my statements and this or that. All he had to do in the first place was just own it and say, yeah, we made a mistake. We mishandled that. We shouldn't have favored the job of this writer over the safety of, you know, the women in our office and our employees in general. and we're working to try to improve our culture. And the people are like, oh, well, we could say, you know, that he, you know, effed up, but he just said that he did. So what can we do about that? And then you just watch and see, you know, how, if his actions back that up, but that never happened. And you think it's just amazing that the team would have known about this and someone, you know, in their media relations would have known, like, hey, all right, so who else has talked? What else have they said before allowing him to say that? Because now this whole situation just looks even worse. And have you read into seeing people talking about the Sterling situation when, you know, Cuban was such an adamant opponent of removing Sterling because of the precedent that could set, and then this comes out.
Yeah. Well, and how about the HR guy too? I don't have the names of all these people off the top of my head, but how about the HR guy that was supposedly hired specifically to oversee what was going on with the CEO, but then, like, he supposedly was being told about what was going on and he wasn't doing anything about it. Like, I just don't. It's like, how does this go on if you're Mark Cuban? And look, I like Mark Cuban. Like, I think he's a good owner from the standpoint of what he does for his players and everything is great. But I just look at him and it's like, okay, if you claim that you didn't know this was going on, like, how can you not know that this was going on for, what, a decade and a half, 20 years? Like, goodness.
And there were formal complaints. And, I mean, even if you didn't get the complaints because it didn't make it that high up the chain, which in itself would be a problem.
Right.
You would hear rumors and rumblings if your CEO, you know, wasn't allowed to work with women alone. I mean, it's just astonishing that I don't think that you can just cover that up like that and then just plead ignorance, but immediately have a bunch of evidence that says that you're lying. It's all just terrible. I mean, it's a terrible situation to begin with, made worse by the way that the team has handled it. And I mean, their statement, you know, they said that, you know, they didn't look deep enough into his arrest records or something like that. And it's like, it's just all just,
that's
so
a major screw up. That's a major screw up. Like, right there, that you didn't even bother. Like, did you not do a, like, if anybody applies for a new job, there's always a background check. Like, especially a position like that.
Let me see if I can pull the press release.
Like, how do you not? I don't understand it, man. Like, it's mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling to me.
It just seems like they got to the point where they had pleaded ignorance for so long, they can no longer say we screwed up, that they just went to, oh no, we're just incompetent.
Right.
Which is clearly kind of what's happened here.
Yeah, and Woj did put out a tweet today that the NBA is launching a confidential hotline to report workplace issues, including sexual harassment, according to a memo Commissioner Adam Silver sent to the team, to the 30 teams today. So,
see, look how easy that is just to, you know, say that, hey, this is wrong and is something that, you know, we need to take seriously, and this is what we're doing. Like, just that quickly. I mean, it's just amazing. Let's see.
Yeah, I just, lost for words, man.
Oh, okay, so.
What do you got?
From the Maverick statement, in a separate matter, we have also learned that an employee misled the organization about a prior domestic violence incident. This employee was not candid about the situation and has been terminated. So, you didn't look any, you didn't check any more records or police reports or anything like that. You're like, oh, well, he said he didn't do anything. When these are serious accusations.
Yeah. Man, that's murky stuff, man. It's murky stuff. Well, you just, I mean, the easy reply to all of this is like, well, you hope that they can learn something from this. But it's like, this should be something that should be already known. Like, to how to handle situations like this, this should have been nipped in the butt, like, years ago.
20 years ago.
Years ago. Like, come on. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
It's just amazing how one organization could just be so incompetent in handling something like this. I mean, especially in the world of professional sports. Like, nothing stays buried for too long.
Yeah.
It's something.
Yep. It's quite the sad deal, and you just feel for the victims involved, and you just hope that they can somehow, you know, just
somehow. There are people that lost their jobs over this,
and, yeah.
You know, left their jobs because they didn't feel safe and comfortable, and it sounds like Mark Cuban is complicit in this at the least by not taking action sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the league, because I would imagine the league is going to do some, I mean, there's already been some investigating into this, and I would imagine the league is going to do some investigating on this. And boy, if more stuff is found, boy, this could be something big for the Mavericks. I don't know.
Do you think the league tries to remove him? Or moves to?
I don't know.
See, I mean, I could understand it both ways.
Yeah. The last couple of days I've been thinking about that, and I'm kind of leaning towards they may not. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if they did, but I think the difference with the Sterling thing to me seems more like Donald Sterling was more so upset that a private conversation, like he wasn't very apologetic for what he had been saying and what he had been doing. He was more so just right. upset that, you know, his privacy supposedly was violated.
He's sorry he got caught.
Yeah, he's sorry he got this caught, really which was. I mean, with Cuban, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much of this he knew. I don't know. I mean, but it's a terrible look. It's a terrible look, man, one way or the other. Rather, Cuban knew what was going on. I mean, if he knew what was going on, obviously it's just completely disgusting. But the fact that if he did not know what was going on, if he really did not know what was going on, then that's just as damning in my book. Like, it's just like
that's just organizational incompetence at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, with that, we're gonna put a bow on this thing, and we got 21 games for the Wolves left this season. We'll see how things go. They got a tough stretch coming up. Houston a couple times. They got two more with Golden State. It looks like too. So it's gonna be a tough stretch.
Hey, Wolf King, Saturday and Monday.
Yeah, that's right.
They should win those.
Yeah, that's right. They got to get those done. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast at podcast1.com. You can find us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a favorable rating. You can find us at 1500ESPN.com as well. We were brought to you by, once again, TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm Manny Hill, and for Derek James, we wish you A very happy weekend. And I'm babbling on too much. I'm just going to end this podcast right now. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. Yes, I'll just say goodbye. Goodbye. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. We'll talk to you then.